Places of Britain by John Beddoe. Britain before Caesar and Claudius. We may now proceed to discuss the ethnological position of Britain, especially its southern part, when the invasion of Caesar brought it within the domain of history. Caesar was informed and believed that the interior of the island was inhabited by an aboriginal race, and that those tribes who inhabited the maritime parts had passed over the channel and had mostly retained the names of the states from which they had proceeded. The lists of the tribes of the south and east of England, which we find in the works of the classical geographers, appear to corroborate this last statement. At the same time, it does not exactly follow from such a similarity of name that the Marini and Atrebates of Britain, for example, were identical with the Marini of Flanders and the Atrebates of Artois. Derivations for these names, and those of most of the other tribes, may easily be found in the Welsh language, and were probably significant in the Belgic, in which case similarity of position rather than derivation of blood may have been the cause of identity of name, and the Marini of Dorset, to return to our example, may have been so called because equally with the Marini of Belgium, they were seated on the coast and not from being a colony of that tribe. Tacitus affirms that the language of the Britons was hord multum diversus from that of the Gauls, and we have the authority of Strabo that the dialects of Belgic and Celtic Gaul were very similar. So little curiosity had the Romans in general about the languages of barbarians that we are not entitled to conclude, from the silence of Tacitus and the geographers, that there were no great diversities of the kind in that part of Britain known to them. Still, Tacitus did found speculations as to the diverse origin of the tribes on their physical aspect, and did not altogether ignore the evidence of language in other cases. His doing thus, by the way, adds to the probability that in his day the Silurians had ceased to speak an Iberian tongue, if they ever had so spoken, for if it had not been so, Tacitus might have used their language, as well as their curly hair and swarthy countenances, to sustain his theory of their Spanish connection. Again, the words acknowledged to be old Gallican, such as peteritum, are generally allowed to be explicable by the modern Cymric, and there is a great resemblance between the Cymric and the Gaelic local names, though both in Gaul and in Britain there are linguistic indications of the presence of Gaels. The names found on British coins, Bodwok, Commius, Dubnovellanus, Tasciovanus, etc., may be, and in some cases certainly are, both Gaelic and Welsh, and the same may be said of the names of the chieftains of Kent, mentioned by Caesar, but none of them seem to be Germanic. The religious institutions also were alike on both sides of the channel, so on the whole were the arms and the ornaments, the torque equally adorned the necks of the Boyan warriors of Boadicea and of the sons of Luach Hen and of the 363 Cymric chiefs who marched in insolent confidence to the fight of Cartraeth, though the British Cetra or target may have been Iberian or Gaelic and not Gallic. It is strange, in the face of all this evidence, inferential and circumstantial though it may be, that some weighty authors have favoured the idea of the Germanic character of the Belgae as a people. Even Palgrave gave it a doubtful adhesion, and Latham does not always and altogether oppose it. The grounds alleged in its support appear to me extremely weak. They are, firstly, the difficulty of accounting otherwise for the rapid Saxonization of England. Secondly, the nearer approach of the Welsh than of the Gaelic to the German tongue. Thirdly, certain statements of Caesar and others as to the German origin of some of the continental Belgae. And fourthly, the possibility of the Galatians of Asia having been Germans. The consideration of the first of these objections may be deferred to a later chapter. The second hardly touches the question. The ancestors of the modern Welsh, in blood and language, were the Salurs, Dimites, Ordovices, Ottodines, etc., and these are scarcely suspected of having belonged to the recent Belgic immigration. Very early Belgian colonies, to which the Firbolg may possibly be ascribed, might be Celtic or Ibero-Celtic, but must have occurred before anyone dates the appearance of Germans to the west of the Rhine. As for the third objection, that there were already, in Caesar's day, some truly Teutonic tribes on the left bank of the Rhine, is probably enough, though their presence there was pretty surely recent. Though Caesar had been told by the Celtic Gauls that most of the Belgae were of German descent, more precise information seems not to have confirmed this statement, for he subsequently specifies four small tribes, the Condrusi, Eburones, Corisi, and Pomani, as Germans, apparently to the exclusion of the other and greater tribes. And even the Eburones, by the way, if we may draw an inference from the name of their great war chief, Ambiorix, were but doubtful Teutons. Tacitus, who evidently aimed at accuracy in the matter, allows only the Trebici, Nemetes, and Vangiones, all close to the Middle Rhine, in the modern Elsass, to be Horde Dubi Germanos, adding that the Treviri and Nervi affected a Germanic origin because it gratified their vanity. The modern population of Hainault, the ancient territory of the Nervi, is Walloon in language and in physical type, notwithstanding its having been occupied by the Franks, and, therefore, is probably not of German origin. To the Treviri, I will return presently, as their case is important. The Gallicism of the great tribes of the Rimi, Bellovaci, Soissons, and Atrebates has hardly ever been doubted, and the name of the last mentioned, and the fact that Divitiacus of Soissons made conquests in Britain, lead us to derive some, at least, of the British Belgae from this quarter. Gallic skulls from the region of the Bellovaci, so far as I have seen, differ considerably in general from those of the Merovingian Franks, but much resemble certain skull types common in the west of England, and these skull types are of very old date in Belgium and northern France, occurring in remains from the sepulchral caves of Nogent, as well as at later periods. And the figures of the provincials on the monument of Jovinus in the Cathedral of Reims, beautifully discriminated in type as they are from the Roman governor, are equally and conspicuously unlike the modern Germans in feature, while notwithstanding the great influx of German Franks that must have poured into the Belgic provinces in times subsequent to that of Jovinus, the modern inhabitants of Reims are mostly quite unlike Germans in complexion, and exhibit, equally with the monumental figures, the tall frames, square foreheads, and long, sharply drawn features, which constitute William Edward's Cymric type. The same complexion and features continue to prevail with little modification as one journeys northeastwards through the Ardennes as far as Liège and Verviers, where many of the Walloon inhabitants reminded me strongly of Cornish men. but they suddenly change and give way to German characteristics when we cross the frontier of the Walloon dialect in the direction of Mechlin or Aachen. Seldom can we see an ethnological line so distinctly drawn as that between the Walloons and the Flemings, though for hundreds of years they have been under the same government. My own observations show the facts pretty clearly. The indices of nigrescence for the Flemish-speaking country, varying from a minus number up to plus 26, and those for the Walloon districts from 28 to 61. But the beautifully displayed statistics of Professor van der Kinder are equally distinct and far more extensive and weighty. Of the 26 arrondissements into which Belgium is divided, in 14 of which Flemish is spoken, and in 12 Walloon, every one of the 14 shows more blondes and fewer brunettes than any one of the 12. At the same time, M. Hoos demonstrates a decided difference in the breadth of the head between the Flemings and the Walloons. It is difficult not to be convinced that we have here to do with a real ethnic frontier, and that we have on the north a Germanic and on the south an old Belgic type. I may be reminded that the old Rheingraber type, to which the Franks and Alemanni are supposed to have belonged, was long-faced as well as long-headed. So it was, to some extent, but not so remarkably and generally as the Cymro Belgic form I have been describing. Moreover, it both was and is usually combined with fair hair, whereas we have seen that the Walloon type includes comparatively dark hair in the present day, and in all probability, through the chiefs, the true Galatae were fair. The mass of the old Belgae was of old something like what it is now. The modern Treves is now within the limits of the German tongue. I should say that the German physical type also prevails there, though not so as to overpower all others. But the city, lying as it does on the eastern side of the principal masses of frontier hill country, may probably have been Germanized during the great westward movement of the Ripuarian Franks in the 5th century. But the main point of interest about the city, for us, is the fact avouched by Jeremy that the Asiatic Galatians spoke the language of Treves. Now, nobody, until lately, ever dreamed of denying the Gallicism of the Galatians. Niebuhr, having made the Treveri Germans, in spite of Tacitus, evaded the difficulty by the futile explanation that Jeremy's Galatians were not Galatians at all, but Goths from Thrace. In this, I believe, no one has followed him, and Latham has rather severely characterized the criticism in his Germania. But others have made the Galatians German, on the ground that the names of the two chiefs who led them across the Hellespont, Leonarius and Lutarius, are very like the Germans Leonard and Lothar, as they certainly are. To this, however, a sufficient answer seems to be that of the three principal Galatian tribes, the Tectosages undoubtedly, and the Trochimi and Tolestopioi apparently bore Celtic names, and that the same may be said of their subordinate tribes, the Tosiopi and Teutobodiaci, of most of their chiefs, such as Brennus, Bitotus, Deitarus, Brogitarus, Bogodiatorus, and of some of their towns, Ecobriga and Telosacorion, Taylor, words and places, gives a list of local names in Galatia, containing some others that might support my argument, but he seems to be in error when he quotes several which embrace the root mag or meg to show the Gallicism of the Galatians. Some, at least, of these words, such as magnesia, having existed long prior to the arrival of the Galatians in Asia, though they may possibly date from that of the Cimmerians. In the Triads, the Belgae seem to be spoken of as the refuge-taking men of Galadin, and the part of South Britain extending between Kent and Somerset, i.e. precisely that part which the Belgae did certainly occupy, is called Arlechwed Geledin in a list of the divisions of Britain. To return to the physical characteristics of the Belgae, we know that they appeared to the swarthy Romans to be a tall and rather fair race, but if they had been generally so tall and fair as the Germans, Caligula would have had no need to choose the tallest of them and dye their hair when he wished to make them pass for German captives. On the whole, I have little difficulty in concluding that the Belgae, though there was in some of their tribes, and perhaps in the noble and military caste throughout, some infusion of German blood, and though former waves of long-headed and light-complexioned warriors, Cymric or Galatic, may have rolled over their country and mixed blood with them in earlier ages, were a Celtic-speaking, and to some extent in blood and physique, a Celtic or Celtiberian people in Gaul, Asia, and Britain. There remain, however, still some arguments from other quarters in favour of the presence of Germans in Britain at this early period. Of these, one is derived from the statements in the Triads and elsewhere in the old Welsh literature respecting the Coroniad, another from the mention by Ptolemy of Peturia and a Gabranchuicorum sinus in the country of the Parisi, north of the Humber. The Coroniad are said in the Triads to have been one of the races who came into Britain in a hostile manner and to have come from the land of Pool, which is, by some, interpreted to mean the marshy lands or pools at the mouths of the Rhine, but by Lord Strangford, who discredited the whole story, to have been some medieval Welshman's notion of Poland. They are also said to have treacherously made common cause with the Saxons in their invasions. In the tale of Chlud and Llewellys in the Mabinogion are some fantastic stories about them, in which they are represented as a race of magicians, reminding one somewhat of the Tuatha De Danann of Ireland, who were destroyed by King Chlud. According to E. Davies, one of this race was called Cor or Cor, a giant, in the plural Coriad or Corion. All this sounds very mythical. Still, to those who find in the Jotuns of Scandinavian mythology merely the primitive Finnish inhabitants, it will present little difficulty. The Coriniad are identified with the Coritavi or Coritani of the Romans from the similarity of the first syllable in each word, from a statement that the Coriniad settled about the Humber, and from the name of Ratis Corion having been applied to Leicester, seemingly the chief town of the Coritavi. The only grounds for making the Coriniad and Coritavi, allowing them to be the same, Germans, are their siding with the Saxons and having a Latin name ending in Avi, like the undoubtedly Germanic tribes of the Batavi and Cimmervi. I entirely disagree with this view, for the following reasons. They are supposed to have occupied the counties of Lincoln, Nottingham, Derby, Leicester, Rutland, and part of Northamptonshire, and in these counties I can find no Roman station whose name appears to be Teutonic, while the important town of Margadunham, near Southwell in Nottinghamshire, bears a name almost certainly Celtic, and Ratis Corion does the same, and Nottingham would seem to have remained Celtic long enough for its Welsh name not to have been altogether forgotten, even in the time of Alfred, for Asser says it was called in Welsh Tygach Cobarc, Again, if the Kuratavi were Germans and were overlaid by successive strata of Angles and Danes, one may reasonably expect to find the Teutonic physical type prevalent over their whole area to a degree not found elsewhere in Britain. Now, in the northern part of the Carnotaurian area, it is really very prevalent, but in the southern, Leicestershire and Northamptonshire, there is, if I may judge by the colours of the hair and eyes, a strong non-Teutonic element. The following table shows a great difference between Lincoln and Leicester, Nottingham and Northampton, in these respects, there being a much larger proportion of dark hair in the two more southern towns. Professor Phillips, than whom no ethnologist was a keener observer, once visited Leicestershire with the expectation of finding a strongly marked Scandinavian type predominant there, but he was surprised to find a dark-haired type, which he supposed to be Celtic, equally prevalent. This may easily be accounted for, and that, without treating the traditions about the Corinaid as altogether spurious, as Lord Strangford thought them, if we suppose the Kuratavi to have been a colony of Celtic Belgae. But unless we throw aside the evidence of physical type, we can hardly conceive how they can possibly have been Germans. Moreover, the silence of Tacitus respecting any suspicion of there being Germans in the island, except the Caledonians, is of weight on the same side. The names Peturia and Gabrantiocorum Sinus do certainly, at the first blush, look rather Teutonic than Celtic, but the suggestion of Mr. Isaac Taylor that the Parisi or Parisi may have been Frisians does not commend itself to my mind. The name of the Frisians was too well known to have thus been distorted, and Ptolemy would probably have called them, and the word there is in Greek, so I can't pronounce it. Can't even read it, as Procopius did subsequently. If Whitaker's etymology be trustworthy in this instance, as I incline to think, the Parisi were simply Perui, herdsmen, and the Gabrantic goatherds. Thus fades away, bit by bit, all the evidence in favour of the presence of Germans in the southern part of Great Britain before the Roman period. Tacitus, whose ideas are always entitled to consideration, thought the Caledonians were of German origin, but the only grounds he assigned for this opinion were their huge limbs and fiery red hair. If their language had been German, he would probably have known and mentioned the fact, as he mentioned the Gallic language of the Gathini and the Aistii. Modern philologists do not, I believe, pay any respect to the notion of Jameson, that Teutonic names existed in the northeast of Scotland prior to the arrival there of the Angles and the Norsemen. The red hair and large limbs are still prevalent in Athol and Mar and Badenoch, but all we can say of them is that they point to an origin from the northern rather than from the Mediterranean long-headed races. The Caledonians might have come over from Denmark and yet borne their Celtic name, but to one who looks at them from the point of view of the physical anthropologist, it may seem more likely that they were a Gaelic or a Pictish tribe with a strong dash of the athletic, broad-headed element. In Ireland, the name of the Corki suggests a Frisian colony, but I know of nothing else to favour the notion. The Irish traditions indicate that there, as in Great Britain and in France, successive swarms of fair-headed invaders overlay the dark-complexioned aborigines, but that any of them were German, in the strict sense, is improbable. it may be worthy of remark that the inhabitants of the Aran Islands in Galway Bay are reputed to be descended from the Firbolg, who were masters of Ireland before the advent of the Tuatha-de-Danann, and that they have nearly the same long-featured, long-headed type already spoken of as common in the Belgic region of northern France. In this connection, the opinion of Dr. Guest that the Belgic dialect belonged rather to the Gaelic than to the Cymric branches of the Celtic tongues becomes very suggestive. There remain other questions, similar to that of the presence of Germans in England before Caesar, which present still greater difficulties, such as the following. Were there considerable remains of the Gael among the Cymry and the Logrians of England and Wales? Was there a notable proportion of Iberian blood among the Britons, especially the Silures and the people of Cornwall? Who were the original Logrians, and had they any connection with the Ligurians beyond the similarity of their names? Did the Phoenicians really trade directly with Cornwall, and if so, did they leave there any traces of their blood? Until of late years, almost all we had to show for our belief in the existence of an Iberian substratum in our population were the conjecture of Tacitus respecting the Silures, the length of the head in the Long Barrow people and some other Neolithic men, the resemblance between the Welsh cavemen and Busk's Gibraltar skulls, and the supposed greater frequency of dark hair, especially in the West, than could otherwise be well accounted for. I hope to be able, in a later portion of this book, considerably to define and strengthen the evidence of physical characteristics. In the meantime, I will say that dark eyes and dark hair, often curly, are still very frequent in Siluria, but that the dark colours are not much less so in Dyfed and Gwynedd, the other ancient divisions of Wales. Dark and even black hair is abundant also in Cornwall and Devon, and in those parts of Scotland and the north of England where Cymric blood may well be supposed to remain in large proportion, such as Upper Galloway, Strathaven, and Allendale. And Strabo says that in his time, the Britons were somewhat taller and darker haired than the Gauls, so that we must suppose that, or rather, dark hair was frequent among the ancient Britons in general, though perhaps especially so among the Silures. I am prepared to admit that a physiognomy strikingly Iberian, or Basque-like at least, is commoner in South Wales than in any other part of Great Britain. Many photographs of Basques and some of Bearnese are recognised both by myself and an observant Welsh anthropologist to whom I have submitted them as being in no respect different from some of the ordinary types of feature in South Wales. Anthropologists have long been awaiting the appearance of some philologist fully qualified to determine the important problem whether there be really an Ascarian or Iberian element in the Cymric languages, or, if so, whether it be equally or more potent in the Gaelic and Urs. The existence of such an element had been boldly asserted and superciliously denied or ignored. Until recently, Professor Rees has answered our call with the assurance that the element which physical phenomena has led us to look for does really exist, that it is to be found in Gaelic rather than in Cymric, and in Pictish rather than in Gaelic, and that the Iberian symptoms among the Silures must be accounted for by their having been, in part at least, Gaelic before they became Cymric in language. Professor Rees's opinion is clear and consistent and may be reconciled with physical facts better than any other hypothesis on the subject, as I shall subsequently demonstrate. The well-reasoned affirmation of Skene that the Pictish language was phonetically intermediate between Gaelic and Cymric is the principal obstacle in its way, and that is not, perhaps insurmountable. The Pictish of Skene, and even of Bede, may have been the Celtic language in the form which it took in the mouth of the Picts, and it is noteworthy that the Picts had been brought intimately into contact with tribes, some of which spoke Brittonic and some Gaelic dialects. The evidence in favour of the importance of Phoenician intercourse with Britain, and of the introduction of at least some little Punic blood into Cornwall, may be found in the chapter of the Crania Britannica on the historical ethnology of Britain. The statements of Diodorus and others certainly lead one to suppose that the intercourse had had a considerable effect, for the grave, black-robed people, described as inhabiting Cornwall, nowise remind us of the British dress, aspect, or character. Traffic with the Phoenicians must have involved intercourse with Spain, but to what extent is quite inscrutable. The maritime position of Cornwall and its many good harbours have led to the introduction of a variety of ethnological types and elements, of which the Shemitic is one. The Iberian was pretty surely there previously. That the Long Barrow race can have been a ruling caste of Phoenicians does not seem possible. The presence of Gaelic-speaking folk in Great Britain has already been touched upon. The subject has been chiefly in the hands of the philologists, and the evidence upon it has been gradually growing stronger. There are those who think the Long Barrow race, if Iberian in blood, were Gaelic in speech, and they adduce Gaelic etymologies for the names of places where chambered barrows and other megalithic monuments exist. If the Bronze race spoke Cymric, as is generally believed, and if the Long Barrow people still spoke Iberian, it is a little difficult to identify the Gael in the craniological calendar. The opinion of Hluid that most of the river names of Great Britain must have been bestowed by the Gaels is not capable of complete proof from the near relation of the two branches of the Celtic, but it appears likely enough. Some of them are perhaps older still, dating from the Iberian or pre-Gaelic period. Bishop Basil Jones supplies, in a work which seems to me a model of dispassionate criticism, a considerable amount of evidence of the presence of Gaels in the coast districts of North Wales and in Brecon at or soon after the time of the Roman invasion, and Professor Rees a good deal more, a week in detail, and of a presumptive and inferential character, for the most part, but strong in the aggregate, to indicate that the greater part of Wales was more or less Gaelic, even to the later period when the Cymric Britons from the north subjugated the whole of that country, and that Devon, on the evidence of the Ogham inscriptions, was still partly Gaelic during the Roman dominion. The presence of Irish physical types in Wales may, of course, be accounted for by the common ethnological elements in the diverse branches of the Celtic-speaking folk, or by the later immigrations from Ireland. But if I am correct in my belief, based on repeated observations, that persons of thoroughly Gaelic aspect are common in the Mendips and in Exmoor, while we know of no Irish immigration into Mendip during the historical period, and while these are precisely the districts into which a conquered race might flee for refuge, the fact furnishes a slight additional argument in favour of the views of Hluid and his followers. As for the Chlogeruies, the view that identifies them with the Belgae is nowise favoured by the Triats, which speak of them as very near akin to the Cymry, and distinguished from both of them the men of Galedin, who were pretty certainly, and the Coroniad, who, if anything, were probably Belgic. The assertion that the Clogheruies came from Guasguin or Gascony will be in no way decisive, even if we could at all trust to it as anything but a medieval fiction. For the Vulgae Tectosages of Tolosa appear to have been the same people with the Tectosages of Galatia, and these latter, as we have seen, spoke Belgic, so that Belgic tribes had penetrated pretty early as far as the Garonne. The temptation to identify them with the Ligurians is very strong, but whatever the old Ligurians were, they differed considerably from the Cymry. As met with in northwestern Italy, they seem to have been a very broad-headed race, brachycephalic, indeed, to a degree very rarely met with in our islands, even in isolated cases. The theory that connects the Clogheruie with the river Liger or Loire is less open to objection. On the whole, we shall run least risk of violating probabilities based on the triads and on what little we know or surmise of their physical characteristics and language if we suppose them to have partaken somewhat of the blood of that great stock which, whether we call it Ligurian or Celtic or Ivernian, has survived the conquests and migrations of upwards of 20 centuries in the centre and south of France, and furnished the ancestry and the physical type, and perhaps the language too, of the swarthy, broad-headed people who prevail there to this day. The Britons may have been derived from a more northern part of Gaul, where the tribe of the same name inhabited Picardy, and accordingly partaken more of the Belgic blood. The physical characteristics of the descendants of the Strathclyde Britons are nearer to those of the Walloons than are those of the modern Welsh. The great stature of the men in some of the vales of Upper Galloway, where Strathclydean blood is probably pretty well preserved, is very remarkable and distinguishes them from their relations in the Principality. The average stature of upwards of 70 men in the Glenkens district, measured by the Reverend George Murray of Balmaclellan, exceeded 5 feet 10 3/4 inches. And in some other districts about the border, where the old British blood is more or less mingled with Anglian, Norse, or Gaelic, it is a little less remarkable. To sum up this chapter, the natives of South Britain at the time of the Roman conquest probably consisted mainly of several strata unequally distributed of Celtic-speaking people, who in race and physical type, however, partook more of the tall, blonde stock of northern Europe than of the thick-set, broad-headed, dark stock, which Brocker has called Celtic, and which those who object to this attribution of that much-contested name may, if they like, denominate Arvernian. Some of these layers were Gaelic in speech, some Cymric. They were both superposed on a foundation principally composed of the long-headed dark races of the Mediterranean stock, possibly mingled with the fragments of still more ancient races, Mongoliform or Allophilian. This foundation layer was still very strong and coherent in Ireland and the north of Scotland, where the subsequent deposits were thinner, and in some parts wholly or partially absent. The most recent layers were Belgic and may have contained some portion or colouring of Germanic blood, but no Germans, recognisable as such by speech as well as by person, had as yet entered Britain.